Hey, Psychos. Our software had a few glitches during this episode, resulting in a few minor sound issues. It's not major, and we did our best to smooth it out, but thought we'd point it out up front. Thank you, and please enjoy the show. This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only, and is not a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the Business Psychos and does not reflect the viewpoints of their current or former employers or clients. Thank you.
It's the Business Psychos, and today we're going to talk it out. The podcast about what execs shouldn't talk about. Connecting executives and those who aspire. We're here to have a conversation, yeah, we're going to light the fire. It's the Business Psychos. The Business Psychos.
Welcome to The Business Psychos, where we discuss how to navigate the complexity of corporate culture and modern life without becoming a psycho. I'm Mary.
I'm Katie.
We are The Business Psychos.
Our second episode just came out. So this is episode five. Granted, we're on a little bit of a lag here for our gentle and beloved listeners, but we are on episode two that has just released, and the response has been so positive that I just want to express a lot of gratitude for everyone that's listening,
yes.
Encouraging, and also that our numbers are putting us already in advanced percentile as far as listenership relative to most podcasts. So that is very exciting. So is that playful?
Always data driven.
I thought it was playful, and it's also data.
You're like, and let me show you this graph about our
my
estimates.
Growth estimates. Of a former revenue leader, I'm obsessed with counting things. I love counting things. I love graphs. I like numbers. I like reports. I like refreshing reports. I like seeing the reports show new numbers. I like deals closing. I like counting money. My profile picture in Slack at a company was the count from Sesame Street. Counting
so awesome.
Much.
That's so awesome. Yeah. Very revealing.
It's not something if you meet me is going to really be an initial impression. That's for sure.
This is like a kind of personality test. Mine in Slack was Trinity from The Matrix. So it's not very revealing. I'm excited. We recently recorded an episode on growth mindset. We have both had a lot of fun. In that episode, we touched on the importance of internal self-work for professional development. But some time ago, I decided that I was going to live my life with a goal to try to grow and evolve to be the best version of myself possible. Thought I would share it because it ties into what we're talking about today. I kind of look at myself like an app that needs ongoing bug fixes, new user requirements, and occasionally a big update with new functionality. And I will say that this all sounds nice, but it can be an unpleasant process. It can even suck. There, I said it. Sometimes I think I'm doing it and I'm pleased with myself. Everything feels great. And then I get hit with something hard and I realize, oh no, okay, there, that's the growth right there. So usually growth is happening when things feel at their worst. Talking about growth is less stigmatized these days, which is great. I love that there are lots of places, including podcasts, to talk about stuff which 20 years ago, no one would be caught dead discussing publicly. Today, we're going to discuss aspects of the growth journey that people don't usually talk about. When we come back, we're going to talk about outgrowing people and places. Next on The Business Psychos. You authored the amazing book, The Paranama Method, on personal development, and I can attest that you practice what you preach. Can you share your view about the personal growth journey?
I'll start with the quote which opens the book by Hubert Selby Jr., which is that sometimes we have the absolute certainty. There's something inside us that's so hideous and monstrous that if we ever search it out, we won't be able to stand looking at it. But it's when we're willing to come face to face with that demon that we face the angel.
Wow. Wow. I love this quote and sort of the adage, where we hurt is where the attention needs to go. I think these days most mental health treatment does focus on human potential rather than the outdated pathology model. Often the focus is developing techniques to draw out patients' creative capacities, feel that we all hold within our unconscious the capacity to heal, create, and expand our awareness, and that this is what leads to a more meaningful connection to life. So to your point, Katie, mental illness isn't some terrible thing that is inside us, but an indication that our potential for growth has been in some way blocked and is unable to express itself.
The top of chapter one, there's the Thomas Merton quote, a paraphrase, that to fill our ultimate potential happens when we accept ourselves fully as we are. Parinama isn't necessarily about mental illness or fixing anything. It's a method for understanding our true nature so we can unlock a more fulfilling and enlivened life. There's work to do, but as an act of ongoing devotion rather than trying to climb a punishing ladder to so-called perfection. I mean, there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with you, Mary, or any of our listeners. We aren't all broken. Most of us had events and circumstances that stressed and impacted the development of our nervous system, creating our current reflexive sense of reality. We all compensated in early life by creating coping mechanisms that helped us to survive when the only option was to make the best of our current situation. But as adults, we have the opportunity to address these developmental gaps, consciously reclaim with awareness and somatic practice, as is done with Parinama method. It's easy to be stuck in old patterns and believe them to be so-called reality.
This is the journey each of us is on, and it's not linear. It's common to take three steps forward, then two back, or not to move at all for some time. It's worth noting that I think, and I'm saying this to myself here, as I often do, you can't approach personal growth like a work or a home improvement project. This was a hard lesson for me, Katie. I probably am still working on it because I love intellectualizing things, as you know. It makes the messy process feel easier, more in my control. But that's the point. It's not. So no project planning, your emotional self-work. Don't be loading your goals in MS Project and then scolding yourself when you don't reach milestones on your preferred schedule. And no, I don't know anyone who might have done that. I'm totally not talking about myself there.
This work is ongoing, but it changes, and in my experience, becomes more enjoyable after going through some of the initial stuff. A stage we can stay stuck in if we think the practice is going to be always terrible. Like, why keep going? And if we approach our growth as linear, it becomes another excuse for self-loathing. So we are so goal-oriented and outcome-driven in the West, we are thinking about investments and returns. Should I do this personal work that's going to be hard, take time, money, if there is no promise of some prize at the end? It's no wonder that a lot of people don't bother to do
work.
Yes,
struggling with basic life challenges, like a job that pays the bills or chronic health issues. There are also some folks who are suffering so much that their day-to-day functioning isn't great. They may not have the internal or external resources just yet to do the work. I have a lot of love and empathy for these folks because I've been there myself. I send love out to everyone doing the best they can right now. And I want to say our discussion today isn't to shame people or position ourselves as somehow superior. You start where you are. And you go from there. As I said, I've been stuck myself, and all we can do is talk about it and support each other and accept where we are. It's time.
There is the very practical reality of physical survival. I've definitely also been one of these people feeling like a slouch for not doing yoga, meditation, you know, drinking enough water, eating clean, and doing the internal reflective work. I was building my career, and the financial security that made it possible to produce Parinama Method came out of the time that I was completely absorbed in a life that had absolutely nothing to do with this kind of deeper self-work. And the reality is it's actually pretty elitist to fault people for not doing the deeper work. It takes resources, with the most basic and expensive ones being time and energy. And for those who can dig into their inner world and start work, guess what? There is another thing that's going to happen. As you shed your skin, you'll find that the things from your former self's life are different. In some cases, you may find that things that you used to enjoy just don't work for you anymore.
Exactly right. Growing people and places.
So we are back talking about outgrowth. Perhaps more universally relatable as an analogy is moving to a new apartment or home. There's a period in between. First, when you're in the old house, but all of your things are boxed up and packed and it's no longer a home. And then you move into your new house and it takes a while to unpack and settle in and make it feel like it is your home. Growth has uncomfortable in-betweens. And the trick is being ready to move, ready to withstand the in-between and not mistake that discomfort as a sign that you're moving in the wrong direction. And imagine even if you do go back to the old ways in your old home, which happens in a growth cycle, you will likely ebb and flow and return to patterns that you think that you would never do again because now you can't unsee it, but you somehow manage to unsee it. At some point, you no longer fit in the old home. And by the time you recognize you've outgrown your old house, it's too late to stay. And the urgency to leave will be considerable. This can create some good momentum, but with end of your rope urgency, forcing decisions that are not ideal make the process particularly challenging.
And there's grief in the process. I don't think we talk about this enough. That old house holds lots of memories and comforts. You know exactly what your couch is going to feel like, how to set that wonky thermostat, how to open the sticky drawer that you never bothered to get fixed. You can walk through that old house in the middle of the night and know your way around by memory because you've been there so long. It's comfortable and that makes you feel safe. But the momentum to grow, like a genie out of a bottle, can't be put back. And all the nostalgia and love for the old house can often become replaced by boredom, even irritability. When you grow and leave that old house or a job or a relationship, you can be hit with overwhelming grief. In my personal experience, you aren't just grieving the people or place you've outgrown. You're also grieving a former version of yourself, which doesn't exist anymore.
Whew, yes. And there can also be grief around awareness itself. Say you are Sally, who, because of her childhood, finds critical, emotionally withholding, or even abusive people familiar, and therefore gravitates towards the comfort of their familiarity. And so as a result, she ends up choosing relationship dynamics with bosses, partners, or friends that diminish her. So imagine she comes to realize the connection between her relationships and her childhood. She gathers strength, leaves the dynamics, and decides she's happier. Maybe she finds supportive friends, colleagues, partner. As part of the process, she may even find herself grieving and even processing the so-called lost time required to come to terms with this.
Quote which resonated with me said something to the effect of unhealthy familiar can be more appealing than healthy unfamiliar. I think one thing a risk-averse wiring system makes us change avoidant to start. Then we start the work and all the negative feelings we hold inside come out. Anxiety, fear, shame, guilt, sadness, anger, all the scary things we hate to experience and see in ourselves. I think what we're really saying, Katie, is that to grow, you're going to need to build a tolerance for facing these kinds of feelings. And in fact, you and I recently had a little growth experience in our friendship.
Knew it was going to happen. You and I talk about this stuff all the time. So it didn't come out of thin air. We've been friends for 15 years, but this podcast changed the nature of our relationship. I said to you something like, we are going to have to level up the friendship by having a fight.
I thought that sounded good. though I think I said disagreement instead of fight. I said, no, it'll be a disagreement. Deeper down, my intellectual side was like, yeah, sure. But honestly, I was hoping that if I navigated things well enough, my perfectionistic brain would be through it.
And you got pissed off and you couldn't avoid the feelings anymore.
I had a lot
anymore.
Of feelings come up. Some were related to you, but I'm also aware that not all of them were. I know my triggers and my window of tolerance. For our listeners who haven't heard that term before, window of tolerance describes the target zone where you're neither emotionally shut down or overwhelmed. I had a lot of strong emotions and shared them with you. I didn't want to. But I couldn't contain it. The feelings were flooding my body. The old did out of awareness or forced me to ignore it.
Yeah. What changed?
Where I am in my life right now, which includes our relationship. Previous versions of myself, it was very important for me to try to please everyone. Dealing with difficult feelings was not something I wanted to deal with, especially if that meant disrupting the status quo or making someone upset with me, especially someone as important to me as you are.
What you're describing isn't a way of being in satisfying, growing, and sustaining
right?
relationships.
It was more important to make people happy than to be authentic.
People who are healthy, and healthy being a relative term, will respect and value your authenticity. Authentic people find it unfulfilling to have relationships with people who aren't able to interact in genuine ways. We are going to piss each other off. It's natural and human. And part of being human is the so-called shadows, like fearfulness, shame, anger that arise. And there are two primary directions for these feelings to go, either outward as a conflict to be resolved, or inward as resentment.
She told me she was surprised her marriage ended because they never fought once in 15 years. And then she went into therapy and realized that was sort of a big clue that disagreements are part of the normal human experience and expressing them is human. But sometimes we can experience things in our childhood which often reprogram us to be more acceptable in many ways.
It's common for children, especially girls, to be socialized that if we're bad or disagreeable, we will face scorn, punishment, or even lose approval and love, even be abandoned for expressing true thoughts and feelings. During our disagreement, I never felt this was going to blow us up. It sucked. I was very sad for a few days. And it wasn't until we talked it through that I felt completely relieved. So at the top of episode 4, we have a really good giggle that for me was part of the relief and joy of coming out of the conflict and feeling our friendship was stronger than before. I mean, the conflict itself wasn't a pleasant feeling for me to have. And I knew you weren't feeling good, but deep down, I knew we would not only be okay, but be closer.
I did too, Katie. Truly.
I
think it's because our relationship that I was comfortable ultimately expressing myself to you, that maybe subconsciously I felt safe enough with you to even allow these feelings to come up and out. I think that subconscious also knew that because you've done a lot of work, that you could handle it, handle me, like I wouldn't be too much. And I think this experience reinforces a new standard in my life for relationships. And this is why I think it's crucial to surround yourself with people who are committed to personal growth. Having authentic interactions with people who have the emotional capacity for introspection and the willingness to go through the rupture and repair process like we did supports our growth.
You're so great. You're And because this is a business podcast, I will mention that this dynamic between us surfaced as we were producing something together. So the professional relevance is that conflicts between colleagues and co-founders may be dismissed as kind of like emotional work or fluffy, but it is usually a major contributing factor to setbacks in the progress of a company or department. When I build leadership teams or when I do advising and consulting that has people working together on shared goals, I will do an early meeting where I flag what I see as the potential interpersonal issues that I suspect to arise as hypothetical examples. For example, saying, Colin, you are going to be more visible and possibly get more credit. Let's talk about how Dave feels about this as a potential issue and how we can potentially stay out in front of this. This stuff is real. And these types of conflicts can be major points of division with leaders. So dealing with this stuff is actually a hack for your professional success.
It makes me think about change management. That's something I focused most of my career on and what I do in my advisory work. When I first started doing large scale change and complex organizations, I thought it was all about the people, process, technology. It was like a good solution. And we just had to go around and tell everybody what to do. And then you realize that it's the personalities and it's the subconscious and the interactions, and that's usually what ends up derailing large-scale change or any kind of change, really. So change readiness and adoption and all that kind of stuff, so many organizations get it wrong because it does sound fluffy. It does sound that we're talking about here, like, you know, deal with that on your own time. This is a really important initiative. We're not dealing with that. Well, we're all people. And until we're all replaced by AI, it's a really big component. And we can derail a pretty complicated change management program pretty quickly. I was really struck, but there is a momentum once you start to see and feel how things can be different. It does start to take a life of its own. Yeah. If you're me, you try to bring everyone along with you. That's another one of my coping mechanisms. I'm a big fixer. But I've come to realize that it's not possible to fix other people or make them who you want them to be. And frankly, not everyone wants to grow, and that's okay. And many people won't, and that's also okay. I think then the challenge comes with redefining the relationship so that your personal growth isn't impacted by lack of theirs.
Yeah, if the relationship has outgrown itself in terms of it being a healthy or appropriate matchup, severing it completely might be the right thing to do, as unpopular as a notion as that is. Or at least reducing the space it takes up in your life so you have more room for relationships on your level, or better yet, people who will inspire you to grow further. Let go of the old relationship and stop trying to make it work for both of you. Let go and wish the best for the person. I mean, one thing I'd mention here is that oftentimes when we end relationships, if we do not have a firm footing and understanding that people just outgrow each other, and you don't need villains and heroes in these dynamics. There's just a much more natural ebb and flow and growth and contraction in life. Then it's easier to just see that and really accept that that person also deserves people that are a better match and more simpatico with the way that they're operating. So they're having more satisfying friendships and relationships for where they're at in their life. When we come back, we're going to wrap up our chat on outgrowing people and places.
Katie, this was a topic we've been wanting to talk about from the very beginning. It was on the original topic list. We talked about doing a podcast, and I like that we shared more about ourselves today.
Yeah, I was excited about this one too. There's more to talk about, but I would love to hear from our audience about their experiences with outgrowing people in places.
While we didn't focus a lot on the work environment in this one, as you said before, Katie, it's very much entwined with one's career development. When you become aware of who you really are and what you need, you may find that your current job or even career doesn't work for you anymore. I have a friend of mine who was an accountant who now owns a dive operation in the Caribbean. Another friend who was in finance then opened a coffee and chocolate cafe. And a third, a former doctor, who hung up his scrubs to run a bike shop in a small town.
No job or relationship is ever going to be perfect, of course. But through self-knowledge and growth, we can get closer to living a life
right.
best suited for us.
Well, this was a great show, Katie. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please like, subscribe, and share with other psychos you know. We'd also love to hear from you, so hit us up on our socials. You can find us on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook under @BusinessPsychosPod. Bye.